In 1995, teenage runaway Jessica Kane was killed in Milwaukee. After being held in question by police for several days, a man named Shante Ott blamed his friend Sammy Hadaway. Both men eventually confessed to their roles in the killing and were sent to prison. The problem is, neither man did it. It turns out Ott suffers from brain damage from a lifetime of cerebral palsy and epilepsy, and DNA evidence determined serial killer Walter Ellis, the so-called Milwaukee Northside Strangler, was actually Jessica's murderer. The Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism is out with a story that suggests Wisconsin's lack of a stated policy for dealing with so-called jailhouse informants or snitches and their unreliable testimony is a big part of the problem. That story was written by Mario Coran, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Doesn't this illustrate the problem with the jailhouse informants? They'll say pretty much anything they think that the people offering them a deal want to hear.
Yeah, and I think on both sides of the law, everybody who I spoke with at least recognizes those dangers.
Some states around the country do have uniform policies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction as to how to deal with jailhouse informants. What's typical of those stated policies?
There are about 10 states that do regulate this or make an attempt to in some way. I think the most common way that states can protect against possible problems that could result from incentivized testimony are requiring some type of corroboration from a witness. For instance, if somebody came forward and said that they knew a guy who committed a crime, those states would require a certain level of evidence to match what that person said before they would move forward and put the person who had been fingered on trial. So we see those protections in Illinois and in California, and specifically in L.A. County. In L.A. County, a deputy wishing to use a jailhouse informant as a prosecution witness, according to this policy, they must obtain prior approval from a jailhouse informant committee. It will include a brief description of the corroborating evidence, the criminal history of the informant, and a disclosure of any incentives that investigators might have offered that inmate. So it really just lays it all on the table and lets everybody know a little bit about the informant and what that person might have to gain.
So there's checks and balances, in other words.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Any indication that Wisconsin is taking any steps in that direction?
No, not that I know of. I think there's this implicit understanding that prosecutors wouldn't put an informant on the stand if that informant didn't have good information. But I think sometimes as a last resort, that's all the prosecutor has. So, you know, while that prosecutor operates within these practical and ethical guidelines, I think sometimes just by default that the informant ends up testifying. And as we've seen in Wisconsin, as well as other states, that's ensnared innocent people and led to quite a few problems.
Mario Coran, thanks for being with us.
It was good talking with you.
Mario Coran of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. You can read his full story at wisconsinwatch.org. Meanwhile, Shante Ott was released from prison in 2009. The Wisconsin Innocence Project is still trying to get Sammy Hadaway's conviction overturned.